We have one mission at the program: develop better leaders and create more cohesive teams.
Let's go, man. It's a race.
Welcome to the Program Podcast. The Program is a team building and leadership development company that works with more than 160 collegiate and professional athletic teams and corporations throughout North America annually. I'm Jake McDonald, principal and lead instructor at the program, filling in for Eric Kapitulik, the founder and CEO of it, who is usually the host of this podcast, but I'm interviewing him today. The program believes that talent allows us to do well in life. It allows us to win games, but a commitment to getting that much better, put your thumb and index finger 2 inches apart, that much better allows us to compete for championships on whatever our chosen battlefield may be. We get that much better by being great teammates and great leaders. Individuals and individual talent can win games, but great teams compete for championships on any battlefield. Great teams, great companies, great schools, great athletic teams, and great families. Great teams compete for championships. And those great teams are comprised of great teammates and great leaders. Joining me today on the Program Podcast to help us become great teammates and great leaders is, as mentioned earlier, founder and CEO of the program, Eric Kapitulik, or as most people know him, Cap. Cap was born and raised in Thompson, Connecticut, and attended Pomfret Preparatory School, where he was a three-sport varsity athlete. Upon graduating, he attended the United States Naval Academy. While there, he was a four-year varsity letter winner and played on three NCAA Division I lacrosse tournament teams. During his junior year, he received the Lieutenant J.G. Frank McKean Award, given to the Navy player who most demonstrated spirit and sportsmanship and who served as the unsung hero. He was also named Navy's most outstanding defenseman and received North-South All-Star honors his senior year at the Academy. Cap graduated in 1995 and went on to serve as both an infantry officer and special operations officer with 1st Force Reconnaissance Company, 1st Marine Division. As a 1st Force Reconnaissance platoon commander, he led 20 covert operations specialists in special forces related missions, including long-range reconnaissance patrols, hostage rescue, high-altitude jump exercises, ship takeovers, and gas oil platform takedowns. Cap left active duty after 8 years of service and graduated from the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business in 2005. He has been extensively involved with the Force Reconnaissance Scholarship Fund, which he established for the children of 6 Marines who died in the helicopter crash while serving under his command. Since 1999, he's been helping to raise funds and has done so through public speaking engagements covering leadership and attacking adversity, and through participation in Ironman triathlons and other ultra-endurance races around the world. In addition to finishing 8 Ironman triathlons, Cap has competed in numerous marathons, the Canadian Death Race Ultra Marathon, the Eco Challenge, the American Birkebeiner Ski Marathon, and was a competitor on the Outdoor Life's Network Global Extremes Challenge. Cap is also a high-altitude mountaineer. He has summited 5 of the 7 summits, the highest peaks on the 7 continents: Mount Kilimanjaro, Mount McKinley, Mount Aconcagua, Mount Elbrus, and the mountain that we'll be discussing in great detail today, Mount Everest. He's married to his wife, Melissa, and they have 2 children, Axel, who is 11, and Anastasia, who is 6. They're anxiously awaiting the arrival of a foster child. Cap, thank you so much for making the time to speak with me and our audience today.
Yeah, thanks, Max, so much. I'm fired up to do so.
So, Cap, before we start getting into Section 4, toughness, just kind of like to ask you a little bit about the program, founding the program, and kind of what led you to that decision. What led you to that process?
Yeah, thanks, Mac. I chuckle only because so many people now at this point, you've heard people when we've been together, you know, say, "Oh my God, Cap, what a great idea." And my line is always, it is a great idea, isn't it? It's not my idea. but it's a great idea, right? And what I mean by that is when I got out of the Marine Corps and graduated, and I went to business school and graduated from Chicago business school, I went into finance for 18 months. And I worked at Goldman Sachs. It's a great firm, really smart people. The people I worked with, although I know Goldman can have a sometime arrogant reputation, the people that I worked with, I thought were great people. Now, maybe that means that I'm arrogant, but they were really good people. The job just wasn't for me. And I founded the program. And when I founded it, I thought the business plan, if I had one, was focused on health and wellness. And we did do health and wellness stuff in our first 2 years in business. But during that time, just very fortuitously, John Tillman, Coach Tillman, now at Maryland men's lacrosse, had just become the Harvard men's lacrosse coach. And he called me up one day and said, "Hey, can you come down here and just work out with my guys? Make them tougher." And I did. But when I was there, I just called out some of their team captains. And they're adult, I mean, full on adults now. But at the time, I mean, they're great young men, smart, athletic, and good people. But they just really struggled when I called them out to be in front of the group with me. They just really struggled communicating, holding their teammates accountable. And from that, we worked with two other college men's lacrosse teams that first year that I was in business, the Naval Academy men's lacrosse team and Loyola. We worked with Coach Toomey down there at Loyola. And during that time, though, I realized, look, these people, these athletes don't need bigger, faster, stronger, or health and wellness. They've got coaches and a staff of people helping them with that. What I think they need is teammateship, leadership, development. And by year three, we were completely out of the health and wellness business for high schools. And the program was just completely focused on working with college and pro athletic teams and corporations, developing great teammates and leaders to create world-class teams. And 15 years ago, I founded it. I'm very proud of being the founder. Mac, you've heard me say this, and I don't say it just because. I say it because I mean it, that yes, I founded it. Yes, I'm very proud of being the founder. And I would be out of business if not for we. We have made the program what it is, of which you've been to say you've been an integral part does not do it justice. You've been a mission critical part and remain a mission critical part of that we that I spoke of. So thank you.
So Cap, when we went through the process of writing the book, for those listening who haven't had the opportunity to read it yet, the process, we kind of broke down being a great teammate, being a great team leader into its various components that we believe. And then each one of our teammates of the program, we had a section that kind of focused on them. And Cap, when I think of you now at the program, selfless, tough, and discipline, those are our core values. However, when I think of you, discipline would probably be first, but a very, very close second, right? Maybe even a tie would be tough. And I think that's when we all kind of initially assigned, like, all right, whose experience is tied to kind of each section that we're going to write about. Toughness was pretty clearly going to be yours. Kind of the backdrop of that section, I'd like to get into how we develop physical, mental, and emotional toughness. But the backdrop of that was your experiences climbing Mount Everest. Can you kind of dive into that process a little bit for our listeners, that experience?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, by the way, for the compliment. That means a lot coming from you. Climbing Mount Everest, in the Marine Corps, when I was still in the Marines, I was sent to mountain leadership course, mountain warfare training, which I know you're familiar with and most Marines are familiar with, up in Bridgeport, California, Pickle Meadows, California. And while there is really where I got the climbing bug. I hadn't done a whole lot of mountaineering before then. But boy, when I caught it, I just loved it. And it really spoke to the things I feel are positive attributes or talents that I do have, which is carry a big, heavy pack and do it day in and day out. I'm good. That's my sweet spot. I really just got into it. I loved mountaineering. And like everything that I feel like I've done in my life, I started small. And then after I accomplished it, I thought, well, maybe I can go a little bit bigger, a little bit longer, a little bit tougher. So it started by climbing Mount Shasta in Northern California when I was at Mountain Warfare Training Center in the Marines. We didn't get to its summit. And I learned a valuable lesson that day that I carried with me throughout my climbing career, which is, although the summit is the goal, mission accomplishment is getting home safely. And I use that every single mountain I've ever climbed, and it served me well. But I digress. The point is, from that, went and climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and then started to climb some of the bigger mountains after that. And finally decided that I wanted to climb Mount Everest. And my wife and I, my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, we got married in Costa Rica. And a week later, she and I were in Kathmandu, Nepal, getting ready to climb Mount Everest. So we got married in Costa Rica, but we spent our honeymoon in base camp on the north side or the Tibetan side, which I always tell, like, what a catch I am as a husband, that's where you get brought for your honeymoon. But anyway, so we end up at a base camp. My wife had unbelievable experience, newlyweds, spent a week in base camp together in Tibet. And then she left. And then a couple of buddies of mine, we then spent the next 7 weeks attempting to summit Mount Everest. And during those 7 weeks, you do two or three, we did three acclimatization hikes to camps lower on the mountain to get your body used to the lack of oxygen at those extreme altitudes. And then we attempted our summit and just had as I highlight in our book, because of poor weather, just had one heck of a challenge. And on the mountain for 7 weeks, spent 6 minutes on the summit of Mount Everest, but returned home safely. And just a really, I think William Blake, poet, in a book he wrote called The Marriage of Heaven and Hell, he says, "You don't know what is enough until you know what is more than enough." And when I think about climbing Mount Everest in bad weather, boy, I think about William Blake, and you don't know what is enough until you know it's more than enough, because I was right on the edge during it. But very proud of that accomplishment.
Well, Cap, first of all, I should know that was William Blake, being an English major in college, because I thought that was Sam Silla, because I hear him say that a lot of the events. But I want to dive into the process. You know, we'll kind of circle back to some of your Everest experiences, but want to dive into the process of how we develop toughness. Now, for years at the program, you know, we only talked about being physically and mentally tough, and it really wasn't until the process of writing the book that we kind of really realize the importance of being emotionally tough too. And we define toughness as our ability to stay mission focused in the face of physical, mental, and emotional adversity. Now, all those components, they're all interrelated, right? You can't just be tough in one area, as we'll speak about. We have to be consistent. But for the purpose of this, I think, you know, just to explain it a little bit, I think we can break it down into those components. So Cap, can you really talk about, you know, how we develop physical toughness first, whether that's, as an athlete or as a parent or as a mountaineer, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, a couple things. It's funny. You said that you give have been giving Sam Cilla credit for the William Blake quote. Now, I feel like I give you credit for a lot of sayings, and consistently you're like, nope, that wasn't me. That was so-and-so. And I keep going back to the well. I keep going, yeah, Max said this. And then you're like, nope, that wasn't me. Now, I remember when we were discussing how do we define toughness as an organization? Because for our audience, and we highlight, right? We've got to figure out what our value system is as a team. But then we've got to go and define what those values are. Because we're all a sum of our experiences, based on my experiences, I have a certain mental picture of what using this as an example, a tough person is, what they do. But based on somebody else's experiences in their life, who may be very different than my experiences in my life, they may have a certain mental picture of what a tough person is or does. So because of that, to ensure that we don't have different definitions, it's not my definition or his or her definition, it's what is our definition of tough at the program? What does it mean to be program tough? That you're the person who said, it's not about becoming physically, mentally, and emotionally, or being able to be tough when it, you know, during physical, mental, and emotional adversity. It's an ability to stay mission focused. That was you who said that, right? Like,
it was, yeah.
It was. Okay, good. Thankfully, I've got that one right. And I think that part of the definition is key, because just like I read something about, you know, nice, right? Being nice. If you're in our case, right, our girlfriends, right? If you've got a girlfriend and she's not nice to the waitress, she's nice to you, but she's not nice to the waitress who comes and serves you on your first date, then as a guy, you should know that woman is not a nice person. She's just nice to you. Because whatever the value is, it's every day, every minute of the day, it's consistent. So I really wanted to highlight that to the audience, is that we don't just become tough. It's that toughness is an ability to stay mission focused in the face of physical, mental, and emotional adversity. Number one. Number two, I don't know about you, Mac, but for me, I think about the book all the time, and boy, what would I do to change it if I were to rewrite it? And the one thing that, there's a couple of things, okay? But when, as we discuss toughness, the one major thing that stands out to me is if you and I were to rewrite, I wrote that section on toughness, though, for the most part, being my section, is I would spend a lot more time, effort, and energy on emotional toughness, on emotional resiliency than what we did, because the more I've reflected on it, if you really press me, I would say that piece of toughness probably has the greatest impact on our success as individuals and as a team. Regardless of maybe what your definition of success is. So interestingly enough, anyway, to answer your question, and maybe you could restate it for the audience, because I've been sucking the air out of the room for so long. Maybe the audience has forgotten the question.
Yeah. So before that, and something you said, Cap, I agree with you. Right. So I think we maybe could have spent some more time, you know, talking about emotional toughness and how powerful that is. That, and I know this is something that you believe and that you're going to talk about, but we have to be consistent. Meaning somebody who's just tough some of the times is not tough. They're a wimp. But I tell teams that all the time. You have to be tough in all those components. So yes, emotional toughness is extremely important. But if we're not physically and mentally tough, I don't know how far that's going to take. Right.
So that's right. They all are interrelated.
They're all tied to each other. So, yeah. But I just want to talk about first about physical toughness, and
yes.
Cap, something else that I will take credit for. For years of the program, our core values, if you remember, we were selfless, physical, and disciplined for probably maybe 3 years. And I thought that described us pretty well. But, you know, as we started growing, you know, really thought that I think tough defines us more. And that this is, we hadn't gone as deep into the process of defining what toughness is, but still, just as a feeling, yes, we're physical, but I think these are some tough men and women that we work with. So
that that is unquestionably you. I still remember us in sitting around the conference table talking about that. And if you remember, Mac, we didn't actually change how we defined the term. We just switched the name of the term. Now, since we have massaged the definition of it, but 100% right. We were we're selfless, physical, and disciplined. And it was you who really fought for the idea of, no, a more accurate reflection is tough. So yeah, that I know for sure. Yeah. Now let's talk about physical toughness. I remember when in as you and I have now said a couple different times, these three things, physical, mental, emotional, go hand in hand with each other. Mac, I don't know if you were part of the conversation or not, but for our audience, Mac and I keep saying they go hand in hand, but in our book, and as we're going to talk about it today, we separated the three: physical tough, mental tough, emotional tough. I actually, maybe it was WeMac, had a conversation with our publisher. And when I had originally written this section, I wrote it so it was basically one big section talking about all three the whole time. And our publisher came back and said, no, break it out to be it's their own sections. And I was like, no, I can't do it. It's got to be all together. And the publisher came back and said, well, do you want your book published? And I said, okay, I'm going to make it into three different sections. So I just rolled over about it. But it does make sense. I mean, in the publisher's defense, it does make sense to split the three into their own components, albeit I do want to discuss how they all interplay with each other. But let's talk about physical toughness or physical resiliency first. First, please understand that the foundation of physical toughness is physical fitness. The foundation of physical toughness is physical fitness. People want to highlight how tough somebody is. Look, if you give me two men, two women, two people who are, one is not physically fit at all, albeit they are tough, they can grind, they can get through stuff, and the other person is incredibly fit, give me those two people and say, okay, well, who do you want to pick climbing the mountain? I'm taking the incredibly physically fit one first. Now, be both, but start with physical fitness. And what does physical fitness mean? It doesn't mean an ability to compete at the Ironman or do a marathon. It doesn't mean climb Mount Everest, certainly. Physically fit means do something, anything, but do something that gets your heart rate up, elevates your heart rate. Why is that important? It's important because the more physically fit we are, the more energy we have. I don't want to get into the biology of it too deep, but it has to do with mitochondria in our cells, and mitochondria are the energy producing part of every cell. And although when we exercise, yes, we use energy that the mitochondria had produced, but in response to it, mitochondria produces more energy for us. So the more we exercise, do something, stretch, walk, whatever it is that we should do based on our age and where we are currently physically, whatever it is that we do, the more we exercise or do something, the more energy we have. All of us are on lots of teams. We're husbands, wives, spouses, parents, coaches, members of a corporate organization. We're all on lots of teams, and all of those teams, if we're going to be the best teammate and leader that we can be on all the teams of which we're privileged to be a part, it requires an incredible amount of energy. Energy that we can give to accomplishing the mission of that team, and energy that we can give to our teammates. So do something. Be as physically fit as you possibly can be. It is the foundation of physical toughness. Now, physical toughness, though, the actual tough part of that is a step further, which is be physically fit. But then when faced with adversity, an ability to keep grinding, keep attacking, an ability to keep on the path to mission focused, mission accomplishment, an ability to remain mission focused. And yeah, how do we do that?
On physical fitness?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, my view on physical fitness, you know, I think a lot of our culture, we only focus on the cardiovascular part of it, right? So physically fit is a marathon runner, right? And yep, I'm not arguing that's physically fit, but aerobic fitness, cardiovascular fitness, that's just one. I look at physical fitness as preparing for the battlefield that you're going to face, right? And so that might be very different from a mountaineer to a special operations warrior to a football player. Because for a football player, running marathons, frankly, doesn't give them the energy that they need to be successful in their battlefield. And I see you nodding along. I know we're in agreement here, but yeah. Just want to make sure that we know that, yeah, know your battlefield. So yeah, if you're a basketball player, you train to get physically fit at the sport of basketball, not necessarily physically fit at the sport of running or mountaineering or over that. So it's whatever your battlefield is, that's what we're going to train towards.
100%, right? I mean, Mac, how often have, you know, back when I did events, right? And I was there with you at events, and we'd be working a major, you know, college or pro football team, right? And after the event, the coaches would be like, oh my God, this guy, and enter, you know, offensive tackle name here, right? This guy, oh, he was dying out there. And we would be like, well, coach, but if you told me meaning me, Eric Kapitulik, like do pushups, oh my God, I would crush that guy. I mean, I look like everybody's all American. I should be the first round draft choice here, right? If it's based on pushups. But to your point about the battlefield, yeah, but if you tell me, hey, Eric, go line up opposite that guy and get to the quarterback, I'm not getting to the quarterback ever. Zero zilch. Because that guy is training to be tough on their chosen battlefield. And that, look, and that's true as an offensive tackle, or your point as a basketball player. My point, and I know our point, is though that this isn't about just athletics and when you're an athlete. It's as us as human beings, because we're great teammates and leaders on a lot of teams. And maybe your battlefield right now, today, is grandmother, grandfather. You're on a lot of teams, and those teams require a great amount of energy. And so what do you do? Do what you need to, so that you have all the energy you need for all of those teams you're a part of to be successful at it. Right, Mac? So completely agree. No, just in closing on physical toughness or resiliency, the only thing I would add is be uncomfortable. Do something that where you have to just kind of scares you a little bit. Oh God, I'm miserable here. That so that we are able, we talk about it in the Marine Corps all the time. We have to stress inoculate. You want to get good at being in stressful situations. Well, you got to deal with a little bit of stress. And then the Marine Corps gives you a little bit more stress, and then a little bit more. And it keeps growing and growing until we've stress inoculated ourselves to a lot of stress, and we can still perform at a high level with it. Well, that's true with toughness or resiliency, which is, you know, when it's cold and rainy outside, yes, you can become physically fit on a treadmill, but if we go outside and run in that cold and rain, we're going to get physically fit and we're going to work on our toughness a little bit. And that's just one thing. Another thing that I would highlight to the audience is it need not be just, you know, training or exercising outside. Although when we talk about physical toughness or resiliency, I think that's a big one. It's really about sacrifice and depriving yourself. Maybe go without a coffee one morning, something along those lines. So yes.
So any other, when we speak about grinding, any other tips or tactics you have, specific ways that we can develop that attribute?
Yeah, as I said, I think that certainly the one that's very tangible that we can do every day is something in a physical nature. And it may just be, and again, right, check with your doctor about this. I don't want anybody to hurt themselves. But, you know, Mac, I tell the story about the times that I did Ironman Hawaii. Are the two worst Ironmans I ever did were the two that I did in Hawaii. Why? Because Hawaii is at the end of October. The World Championships are at the end of October. So I live in New England. So what I would do is I would train in nice, cool temperatures. Yeah, but then I got to go perform in the heat. And oh, God, it was long days for me out in Kona, right? And now that's true for us gardening, right? If you try to get all your gardening done at 6 a.m. in the morning, then great, you're getting it done. You want to make it tougher? Well, start off by doing it at 10 a.m. in the morning so that you don't do it in the heat of the day where you end up physically hurting yourself, but do it at 10 where it's like, oh boy, now I've got sweat coming down into my eyes. So, you know, things like that helps develop our resiliency, our physical resiliency.
Yeah, I try to do something. My, you know, when I think about developing physical toughness, you know, I try to do something like typically when I develop physical fitness, which for me, I like being a strength athlete, you know, focusing on that. But, you know, I have tailored workouts probably, you know, for a week where I lift heavy stuff, try to focus on that. But I try to do at least one workout a week that's completely not something I'm good at. Whether that's the Peloton, whether it's doing a ton of calisthenics, especially when I'm around any one of my teammates, you know, when we're together, we do workouts that are frankly that I'm not very good at. And I believe that's a big part of developing toughness. And I think about when you and I used to be on the road a lot together and we would work out 9 times out of 10, probably more, we would do your workout. And generally speaking, your workout, it doesn't fit any of my goals. Right. I don't get any stronger doing your workout, right? The hour of running up and down a field and doing pushups. I don't know if I get stronger, doesn't fit my goals, but I definitely get tougher doing your workout.
Yeah.
Because every single minute of it, I got to grind, right? I hate it. It's not one of that. But I'll say this though, Cap, and you can disagree with me if you want, but once in a while we would do my workout. And my workout, doesn't fit any of your goals. Heavy squats don't help you swim better, right? Might not fit what you want, but would you agree that those workouts would make you tougher because they were miserable?
I not only hated those workouts, I hated you during those workouts, like on a visceral personal level. And one of those reasons is that what Mac considers to be heavy squats, to make sure that the audience understands this, Mac works out when we would be working with college football teams, he would be working out in the weight room and athletes on big time Power 5 conference Division 1 football teams would be like, damn, Mac's strong. They never said that about Eric Kapitulik. So we would be doing what would be heavy squats and Mac would be looking at the bar and be like, come on, Cap, you can do more than that. And I'd be like, Mac, if I do more than that, it's not about toughness. It's about, I'm about to injure myself. My disc is going to shoot out of my back and hit the water cooler behind us. But Mac, 100%, I think, you know, that's a great example of we get in a routine of doing what we do. Do anything that's outside of the routine, there's going to be discomfort there. And then it works on our resiliency.
Agreed. Now, so physical toughness being the first component, then again, they're all tied together, but you want to talk a little bit about mental toughness.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So first, for the audience, what I would ask and give them pause to think about this, but we make mental mistakes. There's a thousand different times, but there's really three main times. Number one, if you think about it, right? What are the three main times that we make mental mistakes? First is when we're physically tired. Well, if you want to be more mentally tough or resilient, an ability to stay mission focused in the face of mental adversity, well, the less tired you are, the easier it is to stay mission focused, to make good decisions. Therefore, first and foremost, see comments on physical toughness and resiliency. The more physically fit we are, the more energy we have. The more energy we have, the easier it is to stay mentally dialed in, number one. Number two, what happens when we are physically fit, the more physically fit we are, it affects us, it affects our brains. We have more oxygen in our bloodstream. That oxygenated blood is in our brain. The more oxygenated blood that's in our brain, it allows us to think deeper, more clearly. It also affects, to speak again, getting back to how physical and mental go hand in hand, it also affects our sleep. With poor sleep, we all know what happens the day after we get no or bad sleep, how tough it is to stay dialed in for it. So number one, see comments about physical resiliency if we're going to develop our mental resiliency, because we make mental mistakes when we're physically tired, number one. Number two, when do we make mental mistakes? If we think about it, we make mental mistakes when we're under pressure or stress. And Mac, we hear this all the time. When we just got done here last month watching March Madness, right? Again, Eric Kapitulik finishes third from last in the March Madness pool, which is actually an improvement from last year where I finished second to the last in the pool. But when we're watching our clients compete at March Madness, we always hear some announcer say, so-and-so just rose to the occasion. That announcer does not know basic human physiology, because in times of stress, none of us rise to the occasion. We fall back on the habits that we created right up until that moment. So for any of us, for all of us, develop great habits. Just develop great habits. You are what your habits say you are. Everything in life is habit forming. Everything. How we deal with pressure and stress, it's a habit that we've created. There can be, if we think about this, if the audience thinks about it in their own job, in times of great stress, think about your coworkers. One guy, and I'm using the universal term guy here, one man, one woman, times of great stress, they start freaking out, screaming and yelling. Other time, in that same scenario, there's another teammate who stays calm, stays focused on the mission. Develop great habits, because under times of stress, we don't rise to the occasion. We fall back on the habits that we created right up until that moment. So there's a right way to do things. In as an athlete, there's a right way to do things in whatever your industry is. Do it that way every single day, every week, every month, every year, for a lifetime. Most of the time, it's 70 degrees and sunny out and we're calm and relaxed. Yes. But on those days when it's not, in those moments when it's not 70 degrees and sunny, we are not going to rise to the occasion. We're going to fall back onto the habits that we created right up until that moment. If you've developed great habits, you're going to fall back on great habits. If not, you're going to fall back on bad habits. Number two. Number three, when do we make mistakes? We make them when we get complacent. And that is really leadership. It starts with leadership. We have to know that as organizations, as teams, yes, when we lose or something bad happens, everybody gets focused on the mission real well, real quick. We have to know that when things are going well, our team is going to lose focus. You can survive that. When the leader does, then people die, literally or figuratively. So that last piece about how do we work on our mental resiliency, I really challenge leadership to understand that, kind of cliche-ish, but the lows, we've got to make sure that we react to those lows like they're never that low. Yeah, but don't overreact either to the highs either. So stay focused, not on results of your team, although they are important, but stay focused on doing the right thing the right way every day. And therefore, regardless of whether it's 70 degrees and sunny and things are going well or not, we're still just going to keep doing it this way every day. That helps us develop our mental resiliency. Your thoughts on that, Mac? Anything to add to that? I'd like to hear your thoughts about it.
Yeah, Cap, I think it's important to note a lot of times when we talk about complacency, you know, people will think, well, oh, that's not my team, right? We're not complacent. I think it's important to note that complacency is part of the human condition. Marines get complacent in combat. Navy SEALs get complacent. The best companies in the world get complacent. There were times when we were overseas where, yeah, things weren't going well, where at least we'd get shot at every single time we went outside the wire. We were overseas. Frankly, I wasn't that concerned about my Marines' mindset during that time because, hey, they were going to dial it in because they knew we were getting in a fight. But then we'd go like a month without getting shot at. And even Marines, toughest men and women in the world, would start getting complacent, right? They'd stop scanning their sectors as intently, maybe start having conversations. They'd start to lose focus. That's when, as a leader, I was the most nervous, if you want to put it that way. That's when I knew I had to be the most dialed in because inevitably that's when we were going to get ambushed. That's when there'd be a roadside bomb when that complacency would set in. So that's what I tell athletic teams all the time. Like when things are going well, and they are, and not just in terms of wins and losses, you're going to have a couple good practices in a row. You're going to have a couple good work days in a row. People will get complacent. Leaders can't let them. Leaders got to stay on top of their game. They have to stay focused the entire time.
Yes. So what is something so how does that manifest itself on your team, whatever that team may be? As a leader, continue to stress improvement. Just get better. That because by definition, that would be the antithesis of complacent. So whatever it is, do something for yourself as an individual, as a team, to make it better. Losing, that always forces people to get better. Great organizations get better, as we talked about earlier. We're not so focused, although it's important, on the winning and losing. We're focused on the getting better every day part of it.
Yeah, thinking about complacency and also, you know, developing great habits. Can you talk a little bit about the avalanche on Everest and how that relates?
Yeah, sure. It's, I think, on one of those acclimatization hikes that I spoke of earlier that we did prior to the summit attempt, my climbing partner and I were involved in an avalanche. It killed two climbers just ahead of us. And if we had been 20 minutes further up the mountain, we would have been standing right where the full blast of the avalanche occurred. and we would have died that day. And if I died at my funeral, what I think most people would say when people say, "Hey, what killed Kapitulik?" I think most people would say, "Oh, well, hey, he got caught in an avalanche. The avalanche killed him." And I challenge our audience, as teammates and or leaders, to never blame the avalanche. Blaming the avalanche is mentally weak. It's a victim's mindset, blaming other people and other things for what you accomplish or fail to accomplish as an individual or as a team. Mental resiliency means take 100% responsibility for everything that happens or fails to happen. That's a warrior's mindset. Now, responsibility need not be fault or blame. You may not be at fault. You may not be to blame. You still take 100% responsibility. That is being mentally resilient. Why? Because if you take 100% responsibility, you're going to figure out ways, hey, I got to get better. We have to get better. The avalanche didn't kill me. It was choices I made to be in an avalanche area when avalanche conditions were present. You start climbing late in the day, later in the morning, while the sun hits the mountain and creates unstable conditions. No, I know the right way to do it. I'm supposed to be up at 3 a.m. in the morning and up above the avalanche area by 10 a.m. in the morning. I know it, but I choose not to do it. I want to sleep in. I want to eat breakfast, not suck on a frozen Cliff Bar. I know the right way to do it, and I choose not to. And I have this conversation with my son and his friends, young people that I coach constantly. I have this conversation on a different level with my six-year-old daughter, even now, which is, don't blame the avalanche. Take 100% responsibility. The problem with it for so many of us is that the first day that I chose to sleep in, climbing Mount Everest, guess what happened? Nothing. Nothing happened. So you develop a bad habit. And then you go, well, nothing happened, so I'm going to do it again on the second day, and on the third day, and on the fourth day, and nothing happens. So even though you know the right way to do it, nothing happens. You start focusing on outcomes rather than the process. I talked to my son about it. Look, you get an A. Did you study hard for this? Were you playing video games and then just cracked the book open on the way to school? Look, grades, byproduct, you know, the outcomes, if you scoring goals, touchdowns, look, it makes you happy. So I'm happy for you when those things occur, but that's not what makes me proud of you. What makes me proud of you is your hard work that you put in. That's what makes me proud of you. You work as hard as you can, do all the right things, and you get a bad grade, X, I'm still going to be so proud. Axel's my son. I'm going to still be so proud of you. I'm still going to be so proud of you, Anastasia. I make sure I delineate that. I'll talk about it a little bit later. But so realize that you know the right way to do it. The first time you don't do it, chances are nothing's going to happen. That's true for you. It's true for the teams that you're leading. And that's what's so dangerous about it. Because eventually the avalanche happens. And then people blame the avalanche. Don't.
I think that that last part you talked about, you know, being able to respond, I think that ties in real well to emotional toughness. Mm. And you had said earlier, you know, about how you kind of wish you spent more time in the book kind of going into that. Well, here's your chance.
Yeah, thanks.
How do we become more emotionally tough?
Yeah. You know, it's it's a touchy subject now, right? And we got to make sure that we choose our words appropriately when we talk about toughness overall. Because I think when you and I talk about, hey, you got to be mentally tough, members of the audience might think about like, oh, well, what about people's mental health? What about their emotional well-being? There's no disagreement here about the importance of mental health, emotional health. What we're talking about is we're not saying don't have emotion. No emotion, that makes us psychopaths. You'd be a psychopath without any emotion. No, in fact, because we are human beings, we are emotional beings. And the reason why I say we had spent more time writing more in depth about emotional resiliency is that, look, I know it here today. Some people are going to hear about, you know, physical toughness and physical fitness, and they're going to go, meh, I'm not into that. I don't need to be physically fit in my job, in my life. I lead a sedentary life. Okay, I've got some arguments against that, but okay. And okay, mental resiliency, I think most people will think, yeah, you know, mental resiliency, that would make a positive impact on me, right? But we just don't think about emotional resiliency. When in fact, because we are human beings, we are emotional beings, all of us, except for the psychopaths out there who don't have emotion, right? I mean, because we are human beings, we are emotional beings. So when you think about your life, whatever the proportion is, physical to mental, if you were to say, well, my life, my job, or my life, it's 60% physical, 40% mental. Or maybe, look, my job and my life, it's 95% mental, and maybe it's only 5% physical. Okay, all of us have some different percentage, physical to mental, mental to physical. Regardless of what that percentage is, because we are human beings, we are emotional beings, all of our lives are 100% emotional, 100%. That's why emotional resiliency is key to us being great teammates and leaders, key to us being the best teammate and leaders that we can be. What does that mean? Emotional resiliency does not mean no emotion, as we've discussed. What it means is being mature. That's one of the first key words here. Being mature enough to first recognize that you are having an emotional, a visceral emotional response to something. And that visceral emotional response, it need not be, as we discussed already, it need not be anger. It could be too much happiness. We've got to watch out for that. It leads to complacency. But let's use anger or frustration, you know, that type of emotion, right? That, or anger being the emotion. So first, we have to be mature enough to recognize we're having this visceral emotional response internally. We feel a certain way, number one. Number two, we have to develop a habit that after we are mature enough to recognize that we're having that emotional response, feeling, we have to take a deep breath, make it a habit. Just take a deep breath. Even better, if you are able to, now not all athletes are, but most everybody else is able to take a sip of water. Even better, if you can, have something to eat. It activates our parasympathetic nervous system, which again, I'm not going to get too much into the science of it, but by activating that, by eating something, taking a drink, what that allows us to do, and this is the next key word, think. That's the key word. Think. How do I best respond to this natural human emotion that I'm feeling that's going to best help our team accomplish the mission? How do I best respond to this natural human emotion that I'm feeling that's going to best help our team accomplish the mission? Why is that so key when we talk about mental health, emotional well-being? in today's day and age of depression, a couple of things have the greatest impact on depression. Number one is physical exercise. Number two is feeling like a valued member of a team, having great tight relationships. Now, look, Mac, I appreciate there. I'm barely scratching the surface on issues surrounding depression and poor mental or emotional health. And I don't want to minimize it. And you absolutely should seek help, right? 100%. But we're here talking about how do we develop physical, mental, and emotional resiliency? Well, one of the things that helps us with feeling good about ourselves, A, it's physical fitness, and B, it's being a valued member of a team. Being in a loving, supportive marriage, family, athletic team. Teams are important. So if we're making a decision on how do I respond to this natural human emotion I'm feeling that's going to help my team accomplish its mission the most, you're going to be on the most successful in the tightest teams because you're thinking about the team first, not yourself. I get it. You get angry. Screaming and yelling might make you feel good. Yeah, it may also destroy the team that you're a member of. And in the short term, okay, you feel good. In the long term, it will depress you to be off of that team, for that team to divorce, to break up. So emotional resiliency, be mature enough to have that recognition that you're experiencing this strong emotional reaction to something. Then take a deep breath. Develop a habit to take a deep breath. Take a sip of water or eat something. And then think, how do I best respond to this natural human emotion that I'm feeling that's going to best help my team accomplish its mission?
Yeah, I think that really ties into what you were talking about earlier with mental toughness, about having a warrior mindset as opposed to a victim's mindset. And, you know, there's a great quote by a guy, Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, one of the most powerful books I've read. And he talks about between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space lies our freedom and power to choose our responses. In our response lies our growth and our freedom, which to me, there's a lot of things that happen, whether we're talking about athletics, whether we're talking about life, whether we're talking about society as a whole, there's a lot of things that happen to us that aren't our fault, right? That we can't control, whether it's the weather, whether it's our competition, we can't control those things. That's the stimulus, but we can't control our response. Now there's ways, you know, myself and one of our other teammates, Omri, we're training with one of our other teammates, DJ Dolan, who's working towards his PhD in positive psychology, but we're training our ability to grow that space between stimulus and response. But bottom line, just quickly, you know, just taking that deep breath and consciously focusing what response is best for my team, because there's a lot of things in life that are going to happen to us that we can't control, but we can always control how we're responding. And as long as our response is what's best for our team, be that our football team, our company, our family team, whatever team we're on at that moment, that's what we have to do. Now, I think a lot of people kind of use the words passion and emotion interchangeably, and we don't. Why are they different?
Yeah. I'd ask our audience right now to do something wherever you're at. Now, if you're driving, listening to this, okay, maybe don't do this, but if you're not driving or you're the passenger in the car, do this. Close your eyes and think of the last emotional interaction you had with someone. Okay. So close your eyes and think of the last emotional interaction you had with someone in your life. If somebody asked me that question, I'm going to think about a fight. Somebody who I love more than all others in my life, okay? So for me, fortunately, I'm going to think of the last fight I got in with my wife or some interaction with one of our children, okay? The people I love, they're in a special place, right? A special tier. Now, okay, we're thinking about that interaction you had with that person. Chances are it is a negative interaction, bad interaction. Now, close your eyes and think of that same person, whoever it is, the last interaction you had with them that was passionate. Chances are, we're thinking of a pretty positive interaction. Be passionate, not emotional. Be passionate, not emotional. By definition, that really would be emotional resiliency. Is you have emotion, but we're responding to it to lead to the greatest outcome, the greatest positive outcomes that we can have.
Yeah, one of the things I've had to learn too is that, I mean, first of all, that passion that we show, it can be, maybe negative isn't the right word, but bottom line, there's been times when I've had to be strict or firm with my kids. And there's times when I've done it because I've thought to myself, well, this is what they need right now. I might need to scare them a little bit. I need to raise my voice. There's times when I've done that because that's where I've had the desired effect. But there's been other times when I've done that just because I'm mad, right? It's pure emotion. Just because at that moment, I had the stimulus, they did something, and I didn't make a mission-based response. I just based it on emotion. So there are times when, we might need to raise our voices in the locker room before a head coach. Not saying not to do that. As long as our decision to show that passion is always mission-focused. It's always thinking, what's best for my team right now, instead of just responding to that emotion. Is that something you agree with, Cap?
It definitely now. We don't ever say, hey, don't ever yell. There's a time and a place. I mean, true on a battlefield, right? True as Marines. True. I mean, it's that not thinking piece, right, Mac? Is and look, right, Mac, how often did we maybe think, hey, I think this response is going to be best for my team. And then it ends up not being the best response. Right? You make a mistake. The outcome wasn't the desired outcome. That's going to happen. Why? Because as a leader, we're dealing with people, not a process. We're dealing with people. And on Monday, it could have been the right decision for you to yell in this case, or it may have been the right decision for you to just put your arm around somebody in that case. On Tuesday, you make the same exact decision. You have a much different outcome. But as long as we keep focused on, hey, I'm going to make every decision with my team's best interest at heart first. How am I going to respond to this so that my team ends up with the best outcome? It doesn't guarantee us success, but not doing it, it guarantees us failure.
So Cap, kind of one more kind of two-part question. We write our letters on leadership on a regular basis, you know, talking about a lot of these mm-hmm. topics. There was one particular one that you wrote about talking to your son, Axel, right, about toughness that was well-received by our audience. But I guess the two-part thing is, before we go into that, can you just tell real quick how Axel got his name? Because I think that relates to what we're talking
about. Yeah, on Mount Everest, yeah. Well, first of all, let me tell you how he didn't. I love Guns N' Roses. I love them. One of the all-time world's great bands. Axel Kapitulik is not named after Axl Rose, number one. Okay. Who is he named after? On our summit attempt, there was bad weather expected. Typically, you try to do all your acclimatization hikes so that you do your summit attempt toward the end of May, beginning of June, where in the high mountains of the world, you will typically get 10 to 14 days of good weather. That 10 to 14 days of good weather that high pressure system that brings good weather or is good weather, it's being pushed by a massive low pressure system called the monsoon in those regions of the world, which dumps hundreds of inches of rain in lower regions and makes it really gnarly with snow and everything else in the upper regions of that section of the world. You do your acclimatization hikes so that when you do the summit attempt, it's kind of in that good weather window. Well, the year that my buddy and I climbed Mount Everest, there had been massive volcanic eruptions in Iceland that had shut down air travel through Europe, and it had shifted the monsoon. So rather than getting 10 to 12 days of good weather, it looked to us like we were going to get 5 or 6 days of good weather. But we immediately left for the summit. We had to make a decision. Are we going to go or not? Well, we left immediately for the summit. We attained the summit 4 days later. In those 4 days, we slept in total 6 hours, ate nothing, drank even less, spent 6 minutes on the summit, watched the sunrise over the world. This is good timing. And then with bad weather expected later in the day, we turned around and won 36-hour straight movement, returned to base camp. On the way down, stumbling down, we arrived back at advanced base camp, and now we have 18 miles down the Rongbuk Glacier back to base camp. You're out of danger, really? I mean, you would have to do something really stupid to hurt yourself at that point. But it's just a long, it's 18 miles kind of up and down as you're losing elevation to get down to base camp. My buddy and I, we are exhausted, physically, mentally, emotionally exhausted. You never know what is enough until you know what is more than enough. It was more than enough. And we can see base camp because lights are on inside of the tents. And it creates that lantern effect. And we're kind of stumbling our way down the trail getting back there at night. And I come around a corner, and we're still a good mile and a half or so from base camp. And I stumble around a corner, and I see a headlamp. And at first, I look at the headlamp, and I think, oh, maybe somebody dropped their headlamp. And it turned on when they dropped it. Or why is somebody there? Like, it's way late to be going up the mountain. Well, I get down and there's a climber, an Austrian climber. We had made good friends with he and his Austrian climbing group over the preceding 7 weeks. Really cool guys. Guy's a Red Bull extreme skier. He's there. And as I come stumbling down, I look at him and I go, Axel, what are you doing here? And he says, I thought you might be needing this. And he hands me an ice cold Coca-Cola. Mac, I took a hit of that Coca-Cola. Now, look, I've never done cocaine in my life, but from what people have told me, like, as soon as that sugar and caffeine hit my tongue, entered my bloodstream, the birds started chirping, the sun shone down greater. Oh, my God, it was unbelievable. And I looked at him and I said, Axel, I'm naming my first son after you. And that's why I have one Axel Douglas Kapitulik as my son. So, and Axel Naglitch, the extreme Red Bull extreme skier, he remains a great friend of mine to this day. So, yeah, very cool story, right?
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, Mac, you know, just you know, for our audience in closing, I just thought I would. I appreciate the question. And you know this story well, being you and Maria, your wife, being good friends of ours. My wife and I, we got married and we had Axel shortly thereafter. And then we really struggled having our second child. And my wife ended up going through 4.5 years of IVF. And on the last possible embryo, she got and stayed pregnant with our daughter, who's now our 6-year-old little terrorist, Anastasia. But during that time, we never lost hope, but we could do basic math and, you know, probability statistics weren't looking good for us at a time when they want to reinsert 3 viable embryos back inside of Melissa, my wife. We only have one. So during that time, though, we knew we wanted to, we had more love to give as parents. We love being parents. And so we decided we would adopt the child. But then my wife gets pregnant and stays pregnant. She's a high-risk pregnancy. We're getting taken off and on our adoption agency website. And then my wife has Anastasia. And anyway, finally, it gets to the point we haven't been selected. We were down. We had been down to like two or three families. They were going to, the birth mother was going to make a final decision. We just never got selected. So we decide, hey, look, instead of adopting somebody, let's become foster parents. So we make that decision. A week later, I just hadn't called the adoption agency yet. A week later, a birth mother selected us to adopt her child. And we did. This is right during COVID, by the way. And because the child wasn't white, he would know that he wasn't our biological child. But in an effort to ensure that he would know his whole life that that meant nothing to my wife and I, we decided that we would name him Eric Lewis Kapitulik Jr. It's COVID, so we can't go. We as a family don't drive down. I drive down to New York City by myself, pick up and pick up Jr. Bring him home. And we're a family. A week later, the birth mother changed her mind. And I had to take, at this point, not Junior, but her son from my wife, son, and daughter, who were bawling their eyes out on our kitchen floor, drive back down to New York City and give him back to the social worker who would return him to the birth mother. And on the way down there, my wife called me and said, hey, listen, is it okay if Axel doesn't go to school tomorrow? And I said, hey, look, whatever you want is fine. Well, I dropped her son off and then I'm driving home and I'm thinking about this conversation that I had with my wife earlier. And I call her back and say, hey, listen, if you haven't talked to Axel about not going to school tomorrow yet, don't. I'd like to speak to him when I get home. And I guess I'd just like to close the podcast, Mac, with to tell the audience what I talked to Axel about that night. So I got home and he got up from bed and we sat down at the dining room table and I said, Axel, I want to talk to you about something. First of all, as we've discussed, winning matters. If winning didn't matter, then losing wouldn't hurt so bad. So people who say winning doesn't matter, I don't associate with people who tell me that because it matters. It matters a lot because losing hurts. Tonight, we and you experienced loss and it hurts badly, badly. But Axel, you did everything you possibly could have done to be the absolute best big brother you could have been to Junior. In life, you're going to do everything right like you just did. And unfortunately, Axel, you're still going to lose. You're going to suffer defeat. And when you do, it's going to hurt real bad. Because of that, people don't get in the arena. They don't want to feel this way. Axel, if you can, though, if you can choose to do it the right way, every day, all day, yes, there are times you're still going to lose, but Axel, throughout the course of your life, you are going to end up wildly successful, wildly successful. Make that choice, Axel. Continue to make the choice to give your 100% every day, doing things the right way to be the absolute best teammate and leader that you can be. It does not guarantee victory. You will, in fact, still suffer defeat. But over the course of your life, it will make you wildly successful. Number one. Number two, as I explained to Axel, Dad may not know a whole lot about smart, but Dad knows a little bit about tough. I'd like to explain to you a little bit about toughness. Tonight, when I left, you were on the floor of our kitchen, bawling your eyes out. Axel, please understand. Tough guys have emotions. Tough guys have emotions. Really tough guys, Axel. Really tough guys show emotion. And as we talked about, we show that emotion when it's going to help our team. And actually, you're showing emotion at a time where your mom, your sister, you, your dad, it helped our team to show that emotion in that moment. It showed Eric Jr. just how much we loved him. Tough guys have emotion. Really tough guys show emotion at the appropriate time. And Axel, really, really tough guys. There are going to come times where we, by ourselves, we need help dealing with those emotions. Really, really tough guys can ask for help when they need help dealing with those emotions. And your mom and dad love you so much, and we will always be here to help you with those emotions. So please ask for help if you need to, when you need to. Because that's what really, really tough guys do. But then I paused, Mac, and I said, but now, Axel, let me also tell you what really, really tough guys do. Tomorrow morning, your mom and your dad, we're going to get up and we're going to go to work. Because that's what really, really tough guys do. And you're going to go to school because you're a really, really tough guy. I'd like to leave our audience with that story.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Cap. That's really powerful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, overall, I just want to thank you for your time today. Hopefully thanks, I get better from listening to that, and hopefully our audience does as well. So,
Mac, again, thank you. I really appreciate the time. Any time I get to spend with you, right? As we've grown as an organization, where before you and I, by your own admission, we spent too much time together. Now I feel like we don't spend enough. So anytime I get to spend with you is my privilege. So I appreciate it. Thanks, Mac.
For our listeners, to sign up for our monthly letter on leadership and to learn more about the program and our leadership development and team building services for your own team, go to theprogram.org. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at theprogram.org and on Facebook at theprogram.org and at We Do One More, and on LinkedIn at the-program-LLC. If you enjoyed today's program podcast, please leave a review on it on whatever platform you have accessed it from. Finally, to read more about Cap and Toughness, purchase the program, Lessons from Elite Military Units for Creating and Sustaining High-Performance Leaders and Teams. Please visit Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com or on the program website, theprogram.org. Until the next time, thank you and attack.